It was just about 5 years before the great stock market crash of 1929. In fact, it was in August of that year, 1924, that cartoonist Harry Gray introduced to the world a character that would entertain and in some ways inspire and even in some ways shape the thinking of a lot of people, especially in political matters, Little Orphan Annie. For the next 44 years until Mr. Gray's death in 1968, the world was treated to the escapades of this perpetually 12-year-old, spunky little red-haired orphan. And it was in 1976 that the Broadway musical, based on that old comic strip, Annie, hit the stage and is best remembered for that phrase in the song, Tomorrow, the phrase that says, is only a day away. In the original comic strip, the little girl had lived a rough life. Both of her parents had died in a car wreck, and she had grown up in an orphanage without love and guidance. She was finally adopted by a very wealthy man, and the characters in this little comic strip were very strong and most of them very remembered. Some of you may even remember the name Daddy Warbucks. For Annie, she figured all that she had to live for was tomorrow. To her, tomorrow was a source of hope that maybe it would be better than today. And so as she lived a somewhat tumultuous life, she was always looking forward to tomorrow, because no matter how bad things got today, tomorrow was an unknown. And by virtue of that fact, it held great promise. Now, we're not here today to study Little Orphan Annie. But there is some validity, I think, to the idea that surely there will be better days to come. And most of us, in all reality, have gone through some times when we felt as though we just simply couldn't get today over with fast enough and to see if maybe tomorrow would be somehow a little bit better. But the reality is, for some folks, though, tomorrow is something entirely different. It's an excuse for not doing right now, today, the things that need to be done. All of us, I'm sure, have gone through those times when maybe some task was particularly disagreeable or difficult, or we just felt like we didn't have all the tools necessary to pull this off today, and we said, I'll do that tomorrow. But you know, there are some people who always use tomorrow as the excuse for not doing today what really needs to be done. You know, there is a way of looking at things that we sometimes fall into the trap of by saying, you know, we've had so many yesterdays, there's going to be a tomorrow. But you know, we really don't know that. God's Word tells us that tomorrow is actually unknown. I've decided to entitle our lesson this morning, The Myth of Tomorrow. And to be quite honest with you, that terminology alone ought to make us just a little bit uneasy or uncomfortable. Our lesson text is from James chapter 4, verse 14, where James writes, yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. I'd like for all of us to soberly think about the insecurity of tomorrow. Now, I know that that's just really counter to some of the pitches that are made today, especially in things that have to do with saving money and the time value of money, as they say. You know, think about tomorrow. Think about how much better this will be if you'll save it today, and after time, in the future, it'll be better. Again, James says, you do not know what tomorrow will bring. And I'm not trying to throw an unnecessarily, absolutely negative cloud over all of our thinking, but I want us to be realistic enough, well, to pay attention to the words of the psalmist where he says in Psalm 90 and verse 10, the years are full of hard work and pain. They pass quickly from us and they are gone. The immediate application of what James writes here is that some folks that he was writing to were making their plans for the future without including God and God's will. And so he was warning them, you need to be careful and always plan if this is God's will. If God wills. The principle of which he writes is driven home by what he says there in verse 17 at the end of the chapter that I've sometimes referred to, at least in my own personal application, as one of the scariest verses in all of the Bible. And it says, therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Today, I want us to pay particular attention to the danger of delay. Obviously, this is a subject that touches many of the facets of our spiritual lives, especially as we look at this in the context of James chapter 4, verse 17, that verse that I said is the scariest verse in the Bible. It's very likely that there are many things that we need to be doing right now that perhaps some of us haven't done that are really too important to be put off for tomorrow. If you're outside of Christ right now, having never obeyed the gospel, then delay is the most dangerous avenue that you can take. If you have been unfaithful in your service to the Lord, knowing that you need to turn from your waywardness and be restored back to faithfulness, waiting isn't going to make that task any easier. Perhaps you simply need to recognize the need to be more diligent in your devotion and more consistent in your example. Perhaps your spiritual life has been marked by procrastination, or you might even call it laziness. If you're putting off until tomorrow, doing several things that need to be done today, then join me as we open up our minds to the instruction of God's word and see clearly the foolishness of delay. And so as we think about the myth of tomorrow, I've got four things that have come to mind, and I want to share those things with you about waiting and about delay. Number one, the cost of delay is very high. Do you know why we delay in a general sense? Typically, we delay because we're waiting for a bargain. We're waiting for a better deal. We're hoping that an easier time will come along so that we can do it then, whatever it is that needs to be done, whatever it is that we need to obtain or to achieve, whatever we think that if we wait a little bit, it'll get easier or it'll get cheaper or we'll get a better package or whatever. But that's essentially the basic essentials about why we often delay. We're waiting for a better deal. We're hoping that it'll be more convenient to obey God tomorrow than it is today. We somehow think that it will be more expensive to do the thing right now than it would be later, and therefore it's better to wait. This is just the way we think. This is not the way it's supposed to be, but this is kind of the rationale that we use. The bottom line is that waiting to do the right thing always costs more. It doesn't get any easier to do the right thing when we wait, when we put it off, when we postpone, when we delay. There are several things that are measurements, terms of which we see the cost of waiting, especially when we're thinking about waiting to do the right thing so far as the Lord is concerned. Wasted time and opportunities will never be revisited. Just like you, my life is filled with if-onlys. You say that to yourself sometimes, don't you? If only I'd done that. If only I'd said that. If only. You know, those if-onlys are irrecoverable. You can't go back and undo them. Wouldn't it be nice if we could hit rewind? Or remember the old cassette play? I dare not go back any further than the cassette, but the cassette tape recorder and tape player where you could, let me back up and hear that again. And so you just push that button. Takes you back. You can hear it again as though you never heard it the first time, and that's usually why you want to go back and listen again, because you missed it the first time. Wouldn't it be nice if life came with a rewind button so you could back up and say, I got to try that again. Whoo, I messed that up. If only I hadn't done it. Let's rewind. Sorry. It'll never happen. Time and opportunities will never be revisited. There may be more time. We're counting on that. There may be other opportunities. We hope so much that there will. But the fact is, those original ones are gone, and they are irrecoverable. Not just time and opportunities. There's often wasted energy that could be expended on something that needs to be done rather than spending it on nothing. I heard a fellow say one time when they asked him what was his favorite thing to do, and he says, nothing. Does that mean doing nothing is the favorite thing that he ever does, or does that mean nothing is what he likes to do? He doesn't like anything that he ever does. Hard to sort that out. But the fact is, we do spend a lot of energy on nothing, don't we? This kind of ties into the previous point where we sometimes will say, well, you know, I wish I had done that yesterday, or I wish I had gone ahead and done that. Well, what did you do in the place of it? Well, I really didn't do anything. And so what did you lose? Well, I lost that energy that could have been spent on that thing. And so as we delay, there is a high cost of wasted energy. And of course, this one rings with everybody, the wasted money that could be spent now efficiently. But if I put it off until tomorrow, it probably won't go nearly as far if I wait. These are just a few of the little things that illustrate how expensive it is to wait before doing the right thing. Let's move on. Number two. While the cost of delay is very high, the effects of delay are devastating. One of the worst effects of procrastination, whether we're talking about putting off obeying the Lord or just putting off cleaning out the closet, is that each time we put it off, it becomes easier and easier to put it off the next time. You ever noticed that? If you've got a tough job ahead and you say, I'm going to wait, really bothers you to wait, but you wait anyway. And then tomorrow you think, I've got to get that done. And it's a subconscious fact that you got away with not doing it yesterday, and so it'll be a little bit easier still to not do it today. Delay gets easier and easier with time. Again, we should visit James 4:17. Therefore, to him that knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. In fact, the Apostle Paul speaks of some in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 2, as being seared in their own conscience as with a branding iron, or some translations say as with a hot iron. And I'm sure we all realize what that means. As the conscience gets resisted, it gets less and less sensitive, like flesh that has been exposed to heat and has therefore become calloused and tough, so that a great portion of the feeling is lost. That's the way our conscience gets as we, over time, expose it to delay and procrastination. Delay is easier and easier. Every invitation song gets easier to stand through if you know you need to obey the gospel, but you put it off. Or if you know you need to be restored, and yet you resist. I'm not offering you any comfort by assuring you that the resistance will get easier and easier the longer you wait. No, quite the opposite. That's a very terrifying thing. The longer I wait, the harder it will be to obey God. There are a lot of really significant things that can happen, particularly when we delay in spiritual matters. For example, you may wait so long that the Lord gives you up. Over in Romans chapter 1, from about verses 24 through 28, I think there are three times that Paul repeats the phrase, God gave them up. And in that text, he's talking about people who are resisting God, who are going in their own way with no regard for God. In fact, he says, their foolish heart has become darkened, and so far as is practically concerned, God doesn't even exist to them. And so he says three times, God gave them up. There is a time. There is a very real possibility that we may reach a point of no return in our resistance of God, and we may actually lose all desire to turn from our wickedness. If we delay in doing the right things in our Christian life, there are those who are, usually those who are the closest to us, are going to invariably lose respect for us. And therefore we will lose our influence over them. Those who look to us for encouragement, those who depend upon us for guidance, those who are hungry for our example and for our leadership will finally stop counting on us if we neglect. And in fact, they will no doubt ultimately even join us in our neglect. This includes sons and daughters. It includes friends and co-workers, weaker brothers and sisters in the faith. And if we keep turning aside from the opportunities to do good, God may very well in the future withhold those opportunities from us, placing them rather in the path of those who will appreciate them and will move upon them with thanksgiving and sincere obedience. The effects of delaying in the practice of righteousness are truly devastating. Number three, the shame of delay is unspeakable. It would be very difficult to overstate God's love for mankind. As the Lord said in that verse that everybody loves to quote, and there's certainly nothing wrong with quoting John 3:16, "For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believeth in Him should not perish but have everlasting life." Ties together God's love and Jesus' sacrifice for all mankind. The tenderness of the Lord's affection for humanity is powerfully illustrated in Matthew chapter 23, beginning in verse 37, as Jesus tearfully laments over the spiritual destitution of the beloved city of Jerusalem. He said, "O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets and stonest them which are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together, even as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings, and you would not. Behold, your house is left unto you desolate. For I say unto you, ye shall not see me henceforth till ye shall say, Blessed is he that cometh in the name of the Lord." What must the Lord think of those who have turned aside from opportunity after opportunity to grow, to improve their own spiritual lives, to win souls for Him, delaying in obedience, lingering in laziness and inattention? He died for us. And if we attempt to postpone our duty toward Him, we not only demonstrate our own unworthiness of Him, but we also show an attitude which considers the Lord unworthy of our concern. And therefore I say, the shame of delay is unspeakable. And then number four, the risk of delay is pure foolishness. The Lord graciously grants us the opportunity to obey Him, to serve Him, to grow and to learn, to love. But the fact is, the opportunities are not unlimited. There is not a boundless supply of opportunities, particularly for those who spurn them. Isaiah chapter 55 and verse 6 warns, "Seek ye the Lord while He may be found. Call upon Him while He is near." In Hebrews chapter 3, beginning in verse 12, The writer of that book says, "Take care, brethren, lest there should be in any one of you an evil, unbelieving heart in falling away from the living God. But encourage one another day after day, as long as it is still called today, lest any one of you be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. For we've become partakers of Christ if we hold fast the beginning of our assurance firm unto the end. While it is said, today, if you will hear his voice, do not harden your hearts as when they provoked me." Because we do not know what will be on the morrow, the risk involved in delay makes it truly foolish. Tomorrow is just a myth. I know what you're saying. I know what you're thinking. Not because I'm a mind reader, but because I'm a human being. And pretty much every one of us, with a few exceptions, are probably thinking, "But boy, I sure hope not. I've already got a full day planned for tomorrow." And I'm not suggesting that God doesn't want us to make plans. But I'm insisting that even in our plans, God wants to be first. As the song that we sometimes sing says, "Today is the day of salvation. Tomorrow will be too late." If you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, why would you wait any longer to do something so important, knowing that if you postpone it, it'll normally become easier to resist the idea? Or if you've gone astray, become unfaithful in your service to God, why would you wait any longer to be restored? We're going to sing this song to encourage you, and if you need to respond to the Master's invitation in any way, we hope that you'll do so as we stand together and sing.